So what are we starting?
A YouTube comment.
Is it actually that?
No, I just didn't expect that so
a
fast.
A review?
No. Patreon.
Patreon, of course. It's a patron episode.
Yes, thank you to our patrons. Thank you. Patrons for keeping this show going. Look at that. We've got a brand new light in the background.
All for you.
Thanks to the patrons.
Thanks to you. You paid for it.
And before we start the show, I want to ask everyone a question. Everyone that's watching, everyone that's listening, have you ever hallucinated before? Get down to the comments and let us know.
Let us know down below. Start the show.
Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jamp and Luke Gutforth.
Hello.
Hello there.
This week, we're talking about Tetris and exploding heads.
What? Isn't there an exploding head in your film?
There is. There is an exploding head in my film.
Is there any Tetris?
No Tetris.
No Tetris.
You could get the rights for Tetris for the film, surely?
I haven't got any money left, Corey.
I feel like Tetris must be out of copyright by now. Surely.
No.
The idea for the game is so simple that you can't... there's no way you can copyright that because there's been loads of Tetris like knockoffs.
And
other
the
games.
The theme song is just some Russian like folk song.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, super Russian. If you listen to it.
We did it in music.
Anyway, you know the Tetris theme tune.
And we can't get copyright striked because
chuck it in there, go on.
I know Vladimir Putin might come for us.
Oh. He can be a guest.
Avid fan of the show, yeah.
Featuring Vladimir Putin. That'd be fucking headlines.
That would be quite the title.
So, do you know what we're talking about today? Any idea?
Not Luke's film, I can tell you that.
Well,
why not?
Maybe Luke's film, actually. So we're talking today about a very specific kind of hallucination.
Oh.
Okay. Is it where you imagine Tetris blocks everywhere?
And then they fall on your head and your head explodes?
No. Oh. Maybe. Kind of.
Was I close?
No.
Okay.
Isn't you like hallucinating like patterns that link together?
Well, kind of. We'll get there. We'll get there. This is all the way at the end. I've left a little seed here. It's going to grow throughout the episode. And we're going to take the fruit at the end and we're going to eat it. It's going to be very sweet. We're going to enjoy it.
I liked the lemons last time. Get more fruit on the show, please. Thank you.
We've already got a fruit on the show and to be honest...
I did not come here to be insulted. Yes, I did. I know what I'm getting into every week.
So... what is a hallucination? Do you guys know what a hallucination is?
When your brain's been funny and it makes up things that aren't there. You might see them, you might hear them, you might smell them.
Yeah.
That's pretty solid. Yeah. Yeah. So a hallucination, it can be brought on by lots of different things. You know what can bring on a hallucination?
Sleep.
Yeah.
No water.
I was going to say drugs.
Yeah.
Drugs.
Yeah. Also, if a surgeon is cutting into your brain, doing with it.
Oh.
Have a hallucination then. Lots of things.
Really?
Yeah. Passing your eyes, is that a hallucination?
Not really. Oh. I don't think so. Okay. No. Epilepsy, you could cause a hallucination. Different kinds of mental illness, like schizophrenia. That's well known for the hallucinations that it causes. But also, you can have a hallucination without any of those things. I mean, well, not without sleep. Well, actually, not having sleep can cause a hallucination.
Mm.
But what I'm talking about today...
And so can sleeping.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about today.
Dreams.
Well, not dreams. No. The hallucination whilst falling asleep and whilst waking up. So let's read through what the NHS has to say about hallucinations. So
I've had this exact thing. It's so freaky.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, I've had this exact thing where I have this very distinct memory about half a year ago of my being at my granny's house. And I woke up and it felt like my brain was still in basically a hallucination state of a dream, but I was awake. And it was incredibly scary. It was absolutely horrible. I thought that like something was in the room with me. I thought that like something was just outside the window. Ooh. I thought the curtains were like moving and changing shape. It was freaky.
Did it come along with sleep paralysis?
That wasn't with sleep paralysis. Well, I didn't get out of bed. I didn't necessarily try. I did sort of just lie there going, what the flip is going on? So maybe.
So is it like sleep paralysis but without the paralysis?
Well, you can have the sleep paralysis. It's more just the falling asleep. It's really just the hallucination that we're talking about.
Right, okay.
It can have sleep paralysis when you're waking up, but also it also cannot, right? So let's just go through what the NHS says about hallucinations. It's a tough one. We'll get there. So the NHS says that hallucinations are where someone sees, hears, smells, tastes, or feels things that don't exist outside their mind. Luke, stop hallucinating.
What?
You just felt something that exists only inside of your mind.
Don't do this to me. I've already been here.
I'm sorry. Jamp exists.
Okay,
definitely. Look.
Oh, you changed it on.
For the listeners, Jamp is live cutting the show with cameras.
Well, now and... Corey gets a credit. So.
Ah, yes.
I'm puppeteering Jamp.
And Corey's taps.
Well, you have been the whole time.
In the credits, can you put me as a puppeteer, please? Thank you.
I will. We don't do credits, but I'll start.
I'll start doing credits. Start doing them every week. So. So there are commonly people with schizophrenia usually experiences hearing voices. And it's interesting because it says that they could be frightening, but they usually have an identifiable cause. And it says to see your GP straight away if you're experiencing hallucinations, because there's different treatment options and all of that sort of stuff. Really, what's interesting is that it says see your GP if you experience hallucinations, but you don't necessarily need to see your GP if you experience hallucinations. Because lots of people experience hallucinations for basically a kind of unknown reason. There's not much that can be done about it. I'm not saying don't go see your GP. I'm not saying don't listen to the NHS. I'm just saying that some hallucinations are perfectly normal things to experience.
I have a question about this, because yesterday, for the first time in a long time, I was listening to pop radio station, and that was a very interesting experience for me. But one of the lyrics was, my friends tell me not to listen to the voices in my head. Essentially. Mm-hmm. And I guess it was talking about, like, you know, this thing. We've talked about this a lot. Some people have like an internal monologue going and going and going. I don't personally have one of these, but you guys do.
Jamp doesn't.
Not really. I have like things that pop into my head sometimes, but it's not like a monologue.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's kind of like how I have.
Now, sometimes.
Yeah. Now, what I find very interesting is it's totally normal. It's totally normal to hear a voice in your head all the time. And that is different to hearing voices that are like talking to you and telling you to do things. Now, even the standard hearing a voice in your head that's like your self that's chatting away in your head, that is a hallucination, no?
Well, yes. Well, it's something that exists inside of your mind. But I think hearing the voice in your head, it's not like hearing it. It's just, you know, it's in your head.
Oh, so no, I know people who've told me that their internal monologue is like they're hearing it like an audible sound.
I have never heard anyone say that. So I guess that would be some kind of hallucination then, I suppose. But I guess because it's not coming from outside of the self, you know what I mean?
And you know it's not coming from outside
the self. Yeah, you're fully aware that it is the self that is fine. Yeah. Because it's like sort of closing your eyes and trying to picture something. It's not necessarily hallucinating because... You can
control it as well, in a sense.
Yeah, you can control it. You're aware that it's sort of it's coming from inside your head, and it's not like it's being experienced from outside the self and coming in through, like, it's not like it's being sensed from outside the self. Do you know what I mean?
Or being projected as if it's sensed from outside the self. Yeah,
exactly. Like, you can hear your own voice both inside yourself and outside yourself, like sort of through your ears, right? Mm. But it's still sort of, you still know it's coming from yourself. So I guess if it feels like you're hearing your own inner monologue in the same way that you'd hear another voice, I guess it could be something to do with that. Although I really, honestly, I don't know. That is interesting, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. So moving on really quick. Have you guys heard of hypnagogic and hypnopompic hallucinations?
No, but I love them already.
Yeah, right.
I've heard of hypnagogic, but I can't remember what it means.
Hypnagogic, really?
Yeah, I've heard it as hypnagogic.
Hypnagogic. I heard hypnagogic.
Cool.
Cool.
Oh.
Well, we'll say hypnagogic. You can say hypnagogic, and
we can confuse everyone. Yeah.
Well, people in the comments can correct both of us.
That's pretty logical.
It's a good idea.
Yeah. Do Joe on.
So, hypnagogic hallucinations and hypnopompic hallucinations. Essentially, those are the hallucinations that happen as you're falling asleep and as you're waking up. So hypnagogic hallucinations happen as you're falling asleep, and hypnopompic hallucinations happen as you're waking from sleep. Mm. So they both happen in the transitional state. I'll say it again. Hypnagogic is falling asleep. Hypnopompic is waking up.
Mm.
Yeah?
Do you know the etymology of these words?
I do know the etymology of these words.
Please.
I'm very glad that you asked that. So they come from, I think, Greek. So they were first described by, I'll just tell you the history of them first. So they were first described by a French psychiatrist, and he called them psychosensory hallucinations. But the term hypnagogic, hypno, sleep, obviously, and agogos or agogos or whatever, it's ancient Greek, which means induced, that came in the 1840s, 1848, actually. And that was, that's basically what we know it as now, which is sort of hallucinations that come from sleep as you're falling asleep. Mm. And hypnopompic comes from hypno, sleep, obviously, and pompy, which means, which is like sort of sending.
Sending.
Yeah. So it's kind of, it's the transition between sleeping and like sleeping and wakefulness.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, I don't really know what they mean by that, but hypno, sleep, pompy, the sort of act of sending.
Your soul is being sent back to your body.
Sure.
Oh. Maybe. Maybe it might come, like,
it's gone. It's gone back. It's come from the real world and gone back into, you know, the when you're asleep, your soul goes to the real world.
Oh yeah.
And then when you wake up, it comes here. Yeah. This little pretend world that we, I'm sorry, Luke.
Hey, I'm not very so grounded in reality now. You can't do it. Don't worry.
I wasn't trying. I was making a joke and I was like, oh no.
You have no power.
A year ago, that would make me go, I have unlocked the secret.
Aha, you tripped up.
I must leave. No.
So, yeah, as you're waking up, hypnopompic hallucinations happen then. And they can be visual, they can be auditory. They're usually one of those two, but they can also like sort of have movement sensations with them as well. So you guys might have heard of the hypnic jerk, right?
Oh yeah, when you're falling asleep and you're kind of twitching.
Yeah, you twitch.
I get that on the tube when I fall asleep. It's so embarrassing. Yeah,
that's hilarious.
And you said it's to do with your body checking if different parts of your body are, your brain checking if different parts of your body are asleep.
I didn't say that today, but I have said that before. I've kind of looked into it more, and there's kind of sort of conflicting things I found. I think that that might be one of the
theories,
one of the reasons. Mm. But there's sort of other things. We'll go into it in just a sec. Just to cover hypnagogic and hypnopompic hallucinations first. Thank you to the patrons that sent this in, because
making us work for our money.
Those words were very fun to read, but saying them out loud has been an utter pain. So. So they happen falling asleep, waking up, obviously. Up to one third of people, and it says up to one third of normal individuals, basically excluding people that have got some kind of psychiatric illness. Yes. Yeah,
sure.
It affects, this is my issue with it. It keeps on saying, in papers I've read and books that I've looked at, they say normal individuals. I really hate that word because it's not very descriptive. I don't know what a normal individual
is. What is normal?
I assume they mean people that don't have some kind of psychiatric illness that results in an increased risk of sort of hallucinations. Mm. Should just say that. Just say that instead of
it's
normal.
It's a bit weird to be like normal people.
Yeah, because it's difficult. It's like it's the idea that if you got schizophrenia, you're abnormal. You're weird.
Well, that's an interesting one because it's a bit of a
cishet white man, Luke. Question is, what is normal? Cishet, able-bodied white man with no mental illness.
Sure. Okay. But what I mean is like, can you use, like, I guess the word normal has a negative connotation, but also it also has like a mathematical connotation as well. Like you have the norm and you have like, it's like an average or something like that. It can have an actual clear definition that is totally a fair assumption to make, right?
Yeah, I just feel like in this context, it's not necessarily specific enough.
No.
And it's just, it does feel a bit sort of...
judgmental.
It feels a little bit careless to I feel like more specificity would be better in this case.
Yeah.
Just personally. But I'm not, before anyone gets up in arms, I'm not cancelling the scientists. I'm not saying that normal isn't a word we should use.
No, but is it in a scientific paper?
It is, yeah. It
was that's unhelpful then.
It wasn't terribly helpful. Yeah. No, I had to assume that what they meant from normal.
You've got to hold yourself to a higher standard if you're writing a scientific
paper.
That's
true.
Yeah. Yeah, of course you do.
So normal, like you say, might mean like straight people. Or like it might mean like, yeah, if you're using it as like an average, if you took an average of people, who is the average, could mean anything.
Yeah, I mean, I assume it's fairly clear that it's referring to individuals that don't have an increased risk of hallucinations already, but I don't know. Anyway, these hallucinations. Hypnagogic hallucinations, it's difficult to kind of sort of estimate how prevalent they are because there's not been a huge number of clinical studies on it, that we don't understand fully the clinical significance of it. But we've kind of got some different numbers here. So from 25 to 35% of people and hypnopompic hallucinations have a prevalence of 7 to 13%.
Hypnopompic are coming out of dreams.
Yeah, so hypnopompic coming out of dreams, hypnagogic going into dreams. So going into dreams, 25 to 35%, coming out of dreams, 7 to 13%. But they're all, both of them actually, are more common in younger people.
I was going to ask this exact thing. I used to have like hypnopompic hallucinations growing up where I would wake up from a dream and I'd have like a lightsaber and it would be so clear and I would be like, I don't know how to keep this because it arrives when I wake up and then it goes after a few minutes. And it was when I was a child, I had it all the time.
I had one the other day in your car, actually.
Did
where
you?
I woke up and I was like, I thought I was on my phone.
Sure.
And then I wasn't. I thought I might have been driving in a convertible as well, but then I wasn't. And I woke up and I was just in your car and I was like, oh.
To be clear, I was driving or Corey wasn't driving. He wasn't having a hypnopompic hallucination in my car whilst driving it.
This was when I'd parked your car and I was sleeping. I was having a nap in your car while it was parked.
Yeah. Corey was driving my car, but not at the time of the hallucinations.
Time for a nap.
I'm on my phone. Oh, I'm actually driving a convertible. Oh, God!
Come to think of it, I actually do wake up a lot thinking I'm holding my phone, and then I look and it's not there, and I'm like, oh, it's quite sad.
It is frustrating. Yeah. The more I think about this, the more I realize I have these sort of things, and it'll make sense. We'll get farther through this episode. I think it's going to reveal a fair bit about us and why the three of us tend to have probably these kinds of hallucinations.
You know what's interesting about the thing you said about the category of normal people,
yeah.
right? Well, if 13% of normal people have hypnopompic hallucinations and about 30% of normal people have hypnagogic hallucinations, then those people aren't normal people. The normal people are the people who don't have those hallucinations at all.
I mean, but are they or aren't they?
Because
this is the thing. We don't, oh God, that's why normal is such an awful way. This is, my science teachers growing up have ruined me. I can't use the word, what is it? Amount. Every single time I try and use the word amount, my brain is like, don't do that. Because whenever we were in science, they said, you can't say amount. You've got to say volume or area or what, you've got to be specific.
Right.
So the word amount in my head, you'll probably notice, I very rarely use it or I hesitate before using it.
Mm-hmm.
And normal is a word like that as well, where it's not specific enough to be used. You need to be clear about what you mean by normal, or, you know, you need to highlight it somewhere else in the paper. But what does normal mean? Especially when you're talking about something weird that's going on with the population.
And you're a scientist.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like, you have a bit of a burden of like specificity on you there.
Yeah, I mean, like, what? Why are articles and papers and study, blah blah blah, all that so long and full of so many big words that I need to look up if they're not being specific? Mm-hmm. I've wasted so much of my time just pressing down on my phone or on my keyboard just to highlight the definition of a word, see what it means.
Not the word normal.
Look up.
No, not the word normal. Not the word normal.
What does that mean?
You can't find out what that means. It just means whatever.
It doesn't come up with a definition.
Yeah.
Normal.
No.
Yeah.
Well, that's quite abnormal. Anyway. Yeah. So what kind of things do you think, we've already kind of touched on this, but what kind of things do you think would increase your sort of not risk or the likelihood of having these kinds of hallucinations?
Sorry, for an individual or... For any individual, what would make it more likely that any individual would have them?
Yes, sure.
Sleep deprivation.
It's not there, but yeah. I do know off that it's not in that list that I've got here, but it is. Yeah. I do know. Yes, from elsewhere. Yes, sleep deprivation or like poor sleep hygiene. Yeah,
sleeping in a new place.
It doesn't say that there. No. I've got current drug use, mood disorders, anxiety, and past alcohol use. So these things can kind of increase your risk of.
Very interesting that alcohol use can have an effect on whether you have hallucinations, because that's seen as such a like safe drug by our society that doesn't mess with your mind at all. It just messes with your liver.
Yeah, sure. I mean, alcohol is very much a safe drug, probably because of the amount of cha-ching it brings in.
Yeah,
you know.
True. You think?
Is that what it's for?
That's why.
for a split second there, Luke was so convinced.
You think it's because it doesn't have any effect on capitalism, Corey? Is that what you think?
Someone asked me, how would you, like, what one problem in the world would you want to solve? Like, if you could solve only one of the world's problems. I said capitalism. And someone responded to me saying, why would you solve it if you could just get rid of it? Like, getting rid of it would solve it. That would solve the problem.
I want to solve climate change. Why wouldn't you just get rid of it?
Well, as, I mean, it's like killing two birds with one stone.
With right? one scone.
Yeah, killing two birds with one scone. Fuck you, Peter.
So, don't feed scones to birds.
It's very easy to feed two birds with one scone. Birds are very right. small.
More than two, probably.
You can feed many birds with
one
scone.
We should start using scones instead of stones.
I mean, I feel like if you're trying to...
Yeah, it could be an emu. That's probably just one... That's yeah, a one sconer.
Well, no, you just break it in half and chuck it at one emu and then chuck it at the other one.
Is it stale? Is it going to bludgeon them?
Okay, Jamp, you try and kill two birds... No, I would
never mess with an emu. Never.
You try and kill two birds with one stone and I'll try and feed two with one scone and we'll see who comes out on top.
Okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I mean, not okay.
And we each get to pick the other person's bird.
All right, well, Jeb's gonna pick an emu for you.
Emu.
Well, I'm gonna pick a cassowary, which is like an emu but sharper.
I don't know what that is.
You don't want to look it up.
Okay.
It is worse. It's like a dinosaur.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
This is what happens when you try and have a fight with a scientist.
I looked up weird animals when I was a kid. I can beat you in this.
He's definitely the weird animal kid. Yeah, he was a lizard boy.
I was a reptile kid, a little reptile boy. So we're talking about the things that can sort of increase your risk of having these hallucinations when you're falling asleep and waking up. Drug use, mood disorders, anxiety, past alcohol use. Alcohol affects your sleep as well. Right? Mm-hmm. We were talking about alcohol being a sort of, seemingly harmless drug. But it's not great. You don't necessarily sleep very well on alcohol. That's why even if you sleep like sort of 12 hours after a night out, even if you don't have that bad hangover, you wake up, you do not feel rested at all.
Yeah, it gives you an inflammation, doesn't it?
Yeah, you're chucking poison in your body, aren't you? You're chucking poison, and your body's like, well, look, I can digest this poison, so cool, but also you're going to be messed up for a little bit, you know? You're
gonna be messed up. I'm going to take my damn time.
Exactly.
Digesting this poison.
So... there's also they're not uncommon. This is the thing. They're not uncommon, but they are more common in people with narcolepsy or other kinds of sort of other some other sleep disorders.
I would say they're not normal people.
People with narcolepsy.
Yeah. Oh, not everyone has narcolepsy. Most of them don't.
It's terribly narcophobic of you.
Coming out with the hot takes today.
Hey, man.
So hypnagogic and hypnopompic hallucinations, they can happen, they can last, seconds, minutes. They're variable, essentially what I'm saying. Why are words so hard right now? But they could be anything. They could be sort of lines, patterns. They could be people. I remember once I had a hallucination of Groundskeeper Willie. It's just his head next to my bed when I was a kid. And I was like, I swear I saw it and I wasn't sleeping. Must have been one of those.
That's horrifying.
That is horrifying.
So freaky.
Did he scream at you?
It was probably because of the Treehouse of Horror episode where he does Nightmare on Elm Street and kills all of the children.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, so it was terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really shouldn't have been watching those as a kid. So it could be complex. It could be humans, animals, all these different things. It could have sounds. It can have lots of different sort of parts to it. And people, this every single thing I've read says, you can have a neutral response, or some people can be scared, or some people can find them quite pleasant. Basically, it just means nothing, really.
All the options.
Yeah.
I suppose you could find them, like, sexy. I suppose that would be a positive thing, unless you didn't want it, in which case it's a negative experience. But it's a different dimension than good and bad.
Perhaps it's just neutral. Yeah. Yes, that's you're right, Luke. You've got the good, bad axis, and you've got the sexy, not sexy axis.
Yeah.
The only two dimensions.
I started my career in the not sexy axis, but the good axis. Good, but not sexy.
And now, you're sexy, but not good.
Oh.
You can be sexy and good.
Well, you're asking for quite a lot there, Luke, aren't you?
Yeah. I'll keep praying.
That's good, because praying is very sexy, isn't it?
It's pretty sexy. I'm pretty good.
I'm getting on both knees.
So, as I said, it was first described in 1846. So we've known about these sort of things for a while. We still don't really know exactly what causes them or exactly how they happen. We've spoken about hypnic jerks, which is not necessarily the exact same thing, but they are more common in children as well. Those are the kind of things that as you're kind of falling asleep, they can wake you up. Your body kind of just sending little sort of signals to your limbs and whatnot to make sure everything's okay and all of that sort of stuff. And basically what's happening with hypnic jerks is it's two different parts of your brain sort of battling it out to essentially have power. So when you're asleep, one part of your brain is sort of more dominant and doing all the sleep stuff. Mm-hmm. When you're awake, there's another part of your brain sending signals and doing other stuff. That's basically hypnic jerks. We could do another episode on those. They're not super related to these hallucinations, or at least I'm fairly sure they're not the sort of the exact same thing, but you know, they're sort of similar. And we don't really know what causes these hallucinations. Like I've said, it's difficult. They're similar to daytime hallucinations sort of neurologically, but they're also similar to dreams. Which makes sense because it's in that sort of transitional state between waking and sleeping, or sleeping and waking. So we're still working on it. And I mean, I've read a paper that said, there's differences between, you know, sleeping, REM sleep, and these hallucinations. So it seems that it's more similar to daytime hallucinations. But I've seen other stuff, different things saying different places saying different things. So I don't have a solid answer for you, unfortunately. No. But you know, science doesn't really have a solid answer for you.
I read a really interesting thing. I think it was either a scientific paper or a report on the scientific paper that was talking about why we dream, because we still don't really know.
Yeah.
And this one was really interesting. It's kind of relevant to what you're saying there. One of the things it was saying was basically that the brain in some ways rewires incredibly quickly. And that if you were to spend... This theory goes that if you were to spend the entire night with literally zero visual stimuli because you've got your eyes closed, then parts of your brain would start to rewire away from the visual cortex or from the signals coming from your eyes. And so in order to combat this, what the visual cortex or what the part that brings the eye, the data's in for the eye, whatever it is, sends out random signals in order to keep signals going down those pathways in the brain. So that it doesn't get wired out of existence. Ah.
I have heard that, and I'm pretty sure we've had a conversation about this before, or perhaps. I've read the same thing, or you've said it before. I have heard that. I don't know how much water that theory holds. I think it's interesting. I like listening to the sort of theories that people have about why we dream, because they're always very interesting. You know, there's the one that kind of goes that we use it to sort of consolidate memory.
Mm-hmm.
I think we did that in our so we did the Science of Dreams episode, didn't we? Yeah. I think we spoke about that. So there's an idea for it. It's to consolidate memory and to sort of process what happened during the day, which is why you can have sort of stress dreams and things like that.
Yeah.
I mean, and the brain does rewire fairly quickly. I don't know if it's fast. It's so fast that 8 hours of visual inactivity would be enough to do that.
Well, I guess it's just that every other sense is continuing to receive data. Like you're still going to get. Like the touch of your sheets, you're still going to get sounds coming in through your ears, but you've got literal like black and static from your eyes.
Yeah, and generally, it's usually quite quiet as well, which is why, I mean, I suppose like you do have all of that sort of going on in dreams. It is interesting though, isn't it? Because you'd think that...
Oh, sorry, so the added thing to that is that we as animals are so heavily, we have such a large portion of our brain dedicated to sight. So like ears and touch and stuff, they're kind of secondary senses. For most people, whereas you've got such a large portion of your brain dedicated to visual.
Yeah, I had almost an argument on TikTok about this the other day because
how did you have an argument on TikTok?
In my comments. So what I've started doing with my TikTok, which I quite like, it's from stuff that we talked about in the podcast, wherein we talk about something and it's a good idea for some kind of sci-fi story or some kind of element to use in a piece of sci-fi.
Mm.
And I said, hey, you know, every single time we watch a film or read a sci-fi book or whatever, humans always have fewer senses or weaker senses than whatever thing they're fighting. But I think it'd be really interesting for something else to have fewer or less senses than humans and for that to give them some sort of advantage, you know?
A quiet place.
Well, people kept on saying a quiet place. I think my key point was it was fewer and weaker senses. So a quiet place is a case of...
Oh, they've got enhanced hearing.
They've got such good hearing that they don't need to see and it's not really
being blind
a detriment.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? So it's not a thing.
Yeah.
If I said, it'd be really cool, and it was specifically about a quiet place because someone said, a quiet place falls into this. And I was like,
yeah.
They don't need to see because they're hearing
they
so good.
They can hear everything.
What if they had sort of hearing on par with humans and then they realized, if we have like these really... If we use like these really flashy lights... Like humans can't see, and we can, and it doesn't affect us at all, but we can stop them that way.
Yeah.
Or, you know, they don't have a sense of smell, and so you use chemical weapons that make really bad smells, and then it affects people when they're fighting them. Yeah. Or if they can't hear, and they use loud noises, things like that, right? And someone said, oh, but if these aliens evolved, they wouldn't be able to evolve without sight. And I was like, you don't know that. This is a fictional alien world that we're making up. And they said, no, it's following the process of evolution.
It's a very sight-centered opinion.
Yeah, something couldn't have, like something, I'm trying to take this seriously, something couldn't evolve without sight. And I'm like, are you joking me? Things could absolutely evolve. There could be a planet with less light. You could absolutely evolve without sight. And the reason that you think that something can't is because sight is such a dominant sense for you that you feel reliant on it. But
there's an alien sat on another planet with another sense that we couldn't comprehend going, life can't evolve without this sense.
And we're just like being able to see light that we can't see.
Yeah,
like, exactly. Can see heat.
Yeah.
We can sort of feel heat. Well, we can feel temperature changes based on blah, blah, blah in our skin. But we can feel heat, but we can't see infrared. We can't see different wavelengths of light. I feel like you could definitely get by without sight, and there are other senses that could absolutely take over. But you don't, we don't conceptualize that because we're stuck in our own sort of like little case of perception.
I hope you know that the story you're describing about a battle between humans and an animal with less senses is the end of Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets.
That's not the same thing.
An animal slowly losing.
Look, it's a giant snake.
Yeah.
It's a giant snake being controlled by a dead wizard ghost.
It can no longer smell.
But it's being controlled by a dead wizard ghost.
Yes.
And also it can hear. It's just.
Hey, look, it's a very powerful alien
creature.
It's a snake
creature. That if it bites.
It's because it's wounded, isn't it? That's why I can't
see. Yeah, because he stabbed it. And look, it's a snake that can, if it bites you, you're basically dead. The only reason Harry gets out is because Dumbledore has like a bloody magic bird that fixes all of the problems. And phoenixes, not only can their tears heal everything, they can also fly you out of the Chamber of Secrets, Harry, because that's just what phoenixes can do. That doesn't make any sense. Why did she write that?
Is that not what phoenixes can do in the real world?
No.
I just think it's a bit, bit convenient that they're stuck in the Chamber of Secrets and phoenixes, one of their abilities is being able to carry heavy loads.
Yeah.
It's a bit convenient. Yeah. There are many other ways they could have gotten out of there.
That does feel like you've got to page 300 and you've been like, how do I get
out? I need to finish this.
Oh yeah, I locked them in the Chamber of Secrets. How are they going to get out? Well, the Phoenix is already here to save Harry's life. I guess it can do that.
Like, and how does Tom Riddle in his day get out? Does the basilisk, does he ride the basilisk up to the top?
No, because the only reason they couldn't get out was because they blew up the walls.
Yeah.
Yeah, but how do they get out? Because it's like a slide, isn't it?
Slytherin would have built a ladder, maybe.
Mm.
Or just magic themselves. Like,
it's true.
Wingardium Leviosa. I don't know. They're wizards.
Bring a broom with you.
Yeah. Many ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Or bring a phoenix with you.
Well, the phoenix comes down every time. Another one's down there.
Well, you need the phoenix in case you get bitten by the basilisk, right? Like, you'd want to have one nearby.
Thank God the phoenix never dies.
I used to think those books had like great world building and real, like they were really, really well written. But like looking back, it's a great world. It's a lot of fun, but it feels like a lot of stuff was just made up on the spot to solve a problem that like was too difficult to fix otherwise. So back to hallucinations. I've just got some sort of papers that I looked at.
Yeah.
That I found interesting. So there was this one that said that fragmented sleep, and this is what I was talking about earlier, that the fact that the three of us seem to have a fairly high level of these kinds of hallucinations, hypnagogic and hypnopompic hallucinations, probably indicates that we're not very good at sleeping. Because this study found out that people with sleeping problems, people with poor sleep hygiene, tend to have higher rates of these hallucinations. So people with fragmented sleep, as in they would wake up regularly throughout the night, tend to have hypnagogic.
I'm sorry. I've got awful sleep.
Yeah, I can. You must do.
I edit during the evening, and then I go to bed probably later than I should, and then I get up at 4 for my job, 4 in the morning. So it's quite bad sleep.
That's not really good at all.
No,
it's really not good.
No, so. I'll get out of it one day.
Yeah, I have no sleep schedule. I sleep when I feel like, or I force myself to stay awake until I can't anymore.
Oh, that's not good.
Well, it's because I got stuff to do.
I was going
to
say sleeping when you feel like it sounds healthy.
Yeah.
If you need to.
Yeah. But sometimes I feel like sleeping a lot, and other times I feel like I need to do everything all at once.
Mm.
You know? Look, how is your sleep?
My sleep's great, man.
Yeah?
That one, the horrible sleep paralysis episode I told you about, where this demon was coming to attack Rebecca, my partner,
mm-hmm.
that was when I moved into a new house. So, like, obviously I'm feeling a little bit funny. But other than that, yeah, I sleep great.
It's pretty good.
It's lucky you're not moving into a new house anytime soon.
Oh, no. The demon's back.
It's found you.
Knock, knock.
No, so it's interesting, though, because, I mean, I think when my sleep was much worse,
yeah,
I used to get sleep paralysis, all of these different things, way more often. But the idea is essentially that, yeah, so fragmented sleep, waking up sort of regularly throughout the night, relates to sort of higher occurrence of hallucinations. And it's the case for hallucinations, like auditory, visual, olfactory, and tactile, basically all of the senses, essentially, is what they're saying. But what's interesting about that is that it shows that it suggests that these hallucinations aren't related just to REM sleep, because REM sleep doesn't tend to have sort of olfactory, sort of smelling hallucinations, you know, along with it.
Yeah.
You don't usually...
No, you don't smell like pizza in your dreams.
No, exactly. And you don't usually sort of feel things necessarily in your dreams, no, in the same way that you do when you're awake, right?
Never.
Exactly. So that study is kind of saying, oh, well, maybe it's less to do with REM sleep and more to do with sort of the same way that waking hallucinations happen. And yeah, essentially what they're saying is if you've got these kinds of hallucinations, there's no treatment for it. Some people on certain antidepressants or other, I think beta blockers will sort of have an increased sort of incidence of that.
Mm.
But really, just have better sleep hygiene. Just go to sleep at a certain time. Wake up.
It's the silver bullet.
Yeah, it is. Go. It's just be healthier. If you want to not have problems, just be healthier.
There's no way that's the answer.
No, seriously. It's really frustrating because it's like going to the gym and feeling good. Like it sucks to try and exercise when you're not feeling good.
Yeah.
But once you get into a pattern of it, you feel better.
Yeah.
It sucks. It's really annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah. To feel better, you got to feel good enough to feel better, you know?
Yeah, it's like one of those things where when things are getting worse, everything else gets worse.
Mm.
And it's like a feedback loop. And when things are getting better, everything else gets better. So if you're in a good place, you're also going to sleep better, which means you're going to be in a better mood again,
mm-hmm.
on top of the better mood you were already in. And you're going to sleep even better again. And you're going to do your work better and be more efficient. And then you'll get to bed at a good time. And then if other way... things will just get worse and worse and worse and worse and worse.
Yeah, until you stop. And it takes that little bit of extra effort. Yeah, to break the cycle. But moving on from that, there's another one that I thought you guys might find interesting.
Mm.
Lucid dreams. So this looked at using hypnopompic hallucinations to induce lucid dreaming. And in fact, apparently it's quite an effective method. So it's based on... this was tested on people at commercial events over 12 years. And it used hundreds of people. And the main idea of it is basically using a hypnopompic hallucination to sort of induce lucid dreaming by sort of starting a plot, essentially. And then it feels kind of like the hallucination kind of feels like an out-of-body experience. And then that can somehow transition into lucid dreaming. So they looked at this. It's based on, or it kind of came from, a Tibetan dream yoga tradition. And it's been... really heavily changed over the years. And they took data from just under 450 people, 449 people, mostly people who had tried it for the first time. And they tried it over the course of 2 nights, and apparently 484 attempts were successful. So if you want to try and lucid dream, maybe look into that. I think it's quite interesting.
Hmm. Which scientist was it that used to, I guess is possibly related to hypnopompic dreams, or hypnagogic dreams. There was a scientist who created a device where he sat and he would, just as he was falling asleep, the device would like ring a bell or do something to wake him up. And then he'd write down the thing he was just thinking of, because that sort of sleep wake state was particularly good for creativity.
I actually have that in my next little bit.
Was it Galileo?
Well, I don't think it was Galileo. I don't know. This is from, I think, a book called Altered and Transitional States. But this is a section called Creativity and Hypnagogia and Hypnopompia. It might have been Thomas Edison.
I think it was.
Yeah. Thomas Edison, so it says here, Thomas Edison often stretched out on his workshop couch. During these half-waking episodes, he claimed he was flooded by creative images. But Salvador Dali also did it. Apparently, Beethoven used it, these sort of hallucinations for inspiration. Mary Shelley apparently said that Frankenstein came to her as a series of hypnagogic images the evening after her group of friends agreed to compete for the best original gothic horror tale, and she won, starting science fiction.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, go her, right? And lots of different people apparently used hypnagogic hallucinations or hypnopompic hallucinations for creative inspiration. And it makes sense though, right? Because I feel like if you're in that kind of state of almost free hallucination, you've got an idea kind of sitting in the back of your brain. It sometimes does feel like it can just pull it out. Yeah. You know, you can visualize, especially if you're not someone that can usually visualize stuff.
Do you know what happens to the state of your brain in that, like in that transitional state? Because I know that you have, like, this might be a reductive way of talking about it, but I know that there are like different wave patterns between waking and sleeping. Like you have alpha, beta, gamma waves and a few others, which are like some of them are meditation ones, some of them are sleep ones, some of them are alertedness, some of them are flow. Do you know of anything to do with like what the brain is doing in that transitional state that may make like you more creative, for example?
I'm not really sure. There's a lot of people talking about these hallucinations, but the actual sort of studies into the specifics of it, just there weren't that many that I could find that were easy enough to parse. So I'm not really sure, to be honest, where that sort of creative, like what's going on in the brain to make it more creative.
So interesting, because it seems like such low-hanging fruit in terms of if so many like famous and successful scientists and creatives, etc., have like extolled the benefits of this sort of transitional state, you'd think science would want to figure out how to sort of induce it or how to hone that, because people come up with like interesting scientific ideas in those states. Mm-hmm. And like, there's a lot of talk I've seen like about people who, I don't know if this is necessarily accurate, but supposedly, at least in some sort of scientific breakthroughs, there's this sort of the realization, like you've done like a bunch of work and you've got it all in your mind. And then suddenly you have like a eureka moment. Mm-hmm. And obviously there's a lot of work that goes to that eureka moment, but your brain puts together two things, three things, five different things, and then suddenly something makes sense.
Yeah.
And you go, oh my gosh. And we might not necessarily understand how that works. Mm. And you'd think that studying that kind of thing, like where you can get your brain into an altered state where it makes connections it wouldn't otherwise have made, would be pretty desirable.
I mean, there likely are studies on it. I just have not had time to parse. So what I could do is I could definitely go away and look at that, and we could do another episode on specifically this in regards to creativity.
Yeah, I mean, even if there are scientific studies into it, which I'm sure there are out there, it's not something that is like the average person on the street wouldn't, for example, know the fact that a bunch of creatives use the sleep-wake, like the transitional state, to come up with ideas. Because I suppose the idea of messing and playing with your own conscious states is not a particularly common one.
I think there are other ways of coming up with ideas. I think that's the thing. I think that it's not necessarily the best way of coming up with ideas. It's just what a lot of kind of eccentric people did.
Mm.
And whether it actually was the true source of their creativity or whether they could have come up with it anyway, I mean, that remains to be seen, really.
Mm.
But I mean, personally, if I'm going to take a sort of I'm not a neuroscientist. I don't know specifically how brains work, you know. Mm. But if I'm going to take a look at it and try and work through it logically, I would say that it kind of makes sense that in that sort of sleep, like that transitional state from sleeping and waking, it is a good place to have that sort of eureka moment, because you're almost sort of free of the distractions that you'd usually have, you know?
Right.
And you've got all of the sort of stuff that your brain has been mulling over for a while. And we've had this conversation before, that your brain can very easily have come up with an idea before you're consciously aware of it.
Yeah.
That book.
It's trying desperately to get it through to you.
And but there's so much going on under the surface of your brain that you're not in control of, that you're not aware of. Your brain hides a lot of stuff that's going on from you.
Yeah.
And so maybe it's just that when there's less noise, it's easier for that idea to push through.
Yeah, it reminds me almost, there's two things here. It reminds me almost of what we were talking about, I think it was the science of orgasms, where you were talking about how when you're having sex, a portion of your brain sort of shuts down. The prefrontal cortex sort of shuts down and sort of gets out the way.
Mm.
And that if you then have trouble with that, it's because, or it might be caused by the fact that your prefrontal cortex is not shutting down. You're not disengaging in the correct way. I think there was some discussion of that, but
maybe,
don't take that as fact at all.
Go and watch the orgasm, the Science of Orgasms episode to find out.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure it was that episode. Do you remember?
It would have been that episode.
It would have been, yeah.
Okay. Right. And that sort of, so then the extension of that is that if you're saying that it's possible that, although you're not a neuroscientist, as you say, it's possible that that state is a really good way for some idea that your brain has sort of naturally computed in the background to pass that through to your conscious mind. Mm. It would be interesting to know what, like, which parts of your brain are shutting down in order to, for you to access that state.
I suppose, yeah. I mean, we don't know what happens between sort of sleeping and waking, right? We're aware of what processes are going on. Like I said earlier, that with the hypnic jerk, it's kind of two parts of your brain that are sort of wrestling for control.
Yes.
Really. And so it could just be a case of it being similar, those parts of the brain that are like sort of fighting it out.
Yeah. You know? On that, I have a really interesting had a really interesting experience a few years ago, which was that I used to be in a very good schedule with making YouTube videos, mm-hmm. right? And I would make a lot of YouTube videos. And then when it came time, I've got to film a YouTube video, my brain would have just been observing the week I've just had and would just pass me an idea when it was time. It was really interesting. And I started noticing this thing because it was like I wasn't having to think of something. Mm. And I didn't notice the idea come up. I just went, oh, great, got it. Mm. And it was just, I guess my brain, if we were to anthropomorphize it or make it look like or computerize mm-hmm. it, like, is there a word for computerize? Like, to treat the brain like a computer, was observing the world, running a little process that goes, right, we'll have to do that at some point, spots an idea and goes, right, we'll log that. And when he wants to access it, it's there.
Yeah.
And that's really cool that if you, I suppose that's about schedule as well. It's about consistency and your brain getting used to the fact that I'm going to have to do this, so I may as well just do it up front.
Routine as well. Again.
Yeah, I think it's your brain's very good at, gosh, this is, I'm going to bring up driving your car the other day because it's brought up a lot of this sort of stuff for me.
Mm.
Your brain is very good at like ignoring what you're doing. So when you're driving, if you've been driving for a while, you don't pay attention to driving. Like when I'm driving, like I'm paying attention to the road, I'm paying attention to stuff. But when I was driving the other day in your car, and for a second I realized that there's so much to pay attention to when you're driving, and that screwed me.
Because then I was like, had this conversation with Jem on the way here.
Yeah, I was like, oh, okay, now I need to check the mirrors, and I was like, oh, can you check the mirrors? I need to look at the road. Okay, look at the speed, and I'm like, oh, this is too much to do. How am I? And I was like, I was so stressed out driving for about 5 minutes before I forgot about all of that stuff, and I just kept on driving. And on top of that, look, your car is an automatic.
Yes.
I'm used to driving manual.
You're reaching for the clutch.
My foot was hitting the clutch. Yeah, my foot was hitting the brake.
Yeah.
I hit the brake a couple of times being like, oh, that was the clutch.
Yeah.
And it was only when I was just driving and not thinking about it. It was when I was focused on what I was doing, it was fine. But as soon as I got into a flow, that's when I started to have trouble because it's just very different.
Yeah, you know? After a little bit, you just adapt to the new way of doing things.
Yeah, and so your brain probably got used to just observing the week and then coming up with an idea.
It's funny because it makes you realize how, like when you're saying, if you decide, I, whatever you mean by I, have to consciously do all these things, like, okay, I am now checking my mirror. I am now checking the wing mirror. I now need to look at my speed, all that stuff. You, the thing you call I, is not actually particularly good at stuff. Your brain is really good at stuff.
I was so bad. What's annoying is I was so bad at it because I was spending so much energy and attention focusing on when to switch between each task that I knew that I was not taking in enough information from each like sort of input. So I was, whenever I was looking at the sort of wing mirror, I was like, I know that I'm not taking enough information from this wing mirror. There are cars there. Are they close? I'm not really sure. Okay, now it's time to look at the speed. What is this, the right speed? What is the speed limit on this road? I can't. Well, okay, is there cars in front of me? Is there cars behind? It was an information overload. It was too much. And it's shocking that that happened while I was driving and everyone was safe. But like driving is one of those things where it's just such a massive information input. And also the car becomes an extension of your body.
Mm.
I was driving the car and I'm like, okay, yeah, I know where the car is. Like, you know, I don't even need to really look to see where the lane is. I can just feel where the rest of the car is because it's just an extension of my body.
Mm-hmm.
When I turn the wheel like this, the car just does it. It's like when I move my legs, my body moves.
You start doing the overcorrecting when you change lanes, like automatically, because you just becomes instinct.
I don't need to.
Especially with manual as well. There's so many like specific timings between putting down the clutch and changing gear, and then, you know, lifting the clutch as you accelerate. Yeah. It's like that very specific things that you just get used to and you do, which automatically.
I'd forgotten about. Like the only time I'd experienced that was when I learned to drive. And then the other day when my brain kept on doing it, I had to stop myself being like, oh, wow, I'm doing a lot automatically.
Right. Anyone listening right now who isn't a driver and hasn't driven is going to be like, wait, so everyone who's driving is not actually driving?
Yeah.
That's terrifying.
Yeah.
Don't worry. It becomes so normal. But
you will understand once you start driving.
It sounds really freaky.
Okay, think about it this way. Whenever you walk,
yeah, it's exactly the same.
Are you thinking about, I need to put this foot in front of that foot? Oh, I'm losing balance here.
Someone's coming towards me. I need to move out the way.
Yeah, you can walk. Well, I'm not saying never drive on your phone. Never distract yourself from driving because it's very dangerous. Yeah. You've got a big metal box that can hurt that can hurt and harm and kill people. But when you're walking along the street, you've got your phone in your hand. You can look at your phone whilst walking down the street and generally be fine. You can avoid people, you can do this and that, because walking is a very simple task that you've been doing for the majority of your life.
It's a very complicated task, but your brain's very good at it.
It's really complicated. You're falling and catching yourself.
Against specific timings with your legs. And
exactly,
stuff.
Yeah. Right? And correcting for minor changes in the ground and the bumps.
Bumpy roads and yeah.
Exactly. But you don't think of it. When you're riding a bike, you're not thinking, pedal, 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 correct. Like, look. You just ride a bike.
You're right. It becomes an extension of you. That's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so driving at some point just becomes such an easy thing for you to do that it's actually harder when you try to focus on every individual thing, which is crazy. It's absolutely crazy. So that is generally sort of those hallucinations, hypnopompic and hypnagogic hallucinations. Mm-hmm. I want to talk to you about the Tetris effect and exploding head syndrome. So
here we go.
Have you guys heard of the Tetris effect?
Tetris. No.
You have heard of it because I was talking to you about I was talking to you about it earlier today because I experienced it.
I can it's like on the tip of my brain.
If it helps you.
Can you give me a hint?
I didn't say this to you. I hadn't seen you earlier today. I said to you what had happened to me after I was driving your car. I didn't say that it was the Tetris effect, but this is the Tetris effect.
Oh. Oh.
What happened to you today, Kari?
So, after I was just talking a lot about driving Luke's car today. after I'd driven Luke's car, when I went to bed that night, because I hadn't driven quite a while, and I spent a good few hours driving that day, when I closed my eyes, what do you think I saw?
Tetris.
I saw the motorway.
Ah.
I saw the motorway. I was on the motorway.
It's a Tetris effect where suddenly, like if you play Tetris for a while, you look around the world and you just see Tetris blocks everywhere and you see things that can tessellate everywhere.
I get this all
it's
the similar, time.
Yeah, it's really close to that. So it's essentially, yeah, if Tetris is the example that's used. So if you, they've done this with Amnesiacs as well. So if you have people play Tetris for an extended period, they will then start to almost sort of hallucinate Tetris. And I mean, I was watching, I think, a SciShow video where Hank Green was like, oh yeah, when I do it, I was very confused looking at the computer because the stuff wasn't moving the way it should be in Tetris. Of course it wouldn't be because it's a computer screen.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's basically sort of playing enough Tetris such that you then sort of hallucinate Tetris onto the world that you're like onto the world outside of Tetris.
I get
especially when you're falling asleep.
I get this with Fortnite.
Yeah.
Do you?
If I play Fortnite and I see a pallet of wood, I'm like, right, I'm gonna go smash that.
Really?
If I play Fortnite and I see a single or double story building, I'll hallucinate how many 45 degree angle staircases it will take me to get to the roof. It's really freaky.
It's weird. It's
I didn't know there was a term for this because I get this all the time. If I get addicted to an iPhone game, like an app, I will hallucinate, especially if it's a very simple app. I'll hallucinate it into like every aspect of my life. So one time I got addicted to this game called, a bit funny, Balls with a Z. And it's a game where there's like a bunch of like number blocks and you have to bounce balls off the blocks to destroy them.
Oh, yes.
And then I found that...
That was invented by Steve Wozniak, I think.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure. Breakout.
It was probably the original, but there's so many like knockoffs on the App Store. But I'd find myself just sat in rooms and imagining, like, not consciously, invasively, I couldn't help it, imagining balls bouncing off walls and where they would end up. It's very, very freaky. I thought I was the only one.
It's a common thing. And what's interesting is that this usually happens when you're falling asleep. So the Tetris effect, I read a paper about it from 2000. They looked at it when you were falling asleep.
Mm-hmm.
But also, and you say intrusive.
Yes.
Let me read a sentence.
That's the scary bit. It is very intrusive.
Let me read a sentence here. Participants playing the computer game Tetris reported intrusive, stereotypical visual images of the game at sleep onset. So as you're falling asleep, you start to hallucinate Tetris. Yep. And I mean, that's what happened when I was starting to fall asleep. And I closed my eyes and I just saw the motorway. Because I was like, driving on the motorway is like playing a game.
Yeah.
It is, effectively, it's just a game wherein if you do it wrong, you die.
Yeah.
Or you get arrested. Which is life, really.
yeah, that is life.
Right?
Life is a game.
but yes, I was seeing it as I was falling asleep. And what's really interesting about the Tetris effect is that even amnesiacs have the Tetris effect. So even if you can't remember that you played Tetris...
Weird.
You'll still, like, they couldn't say, oh yeah, I was playing Tetris earlier today. They'll still, so it's not in the declarative memory, right? So they're not able to say, oh yes, I was playing this and I can recall that. But as they're falling asleep, they'll sort of have the hallucinations of it. And this is similar as well, in that if you have people sort of practice at Tetris, even if they're amnesiacs, I'm pretty sure, I think I read this in that that yellow book that I'll give to one of you today, can't quite remember the name of it. It's sort of the hidden.
Jump and put it on the screen.
Put it on the screen. Yeah, it was talking about how people can get better at games even if they're amnesiacs. So you know, your brain is storing that information outside of the conscious, conscious mind.
It's like you're training your brain to do. You're training your brain to do a task. Is there any kind of correlation between the Tetris effect and there being a game that has some kind of like simple underlying geometry? Because Tetris has simple underlying geometry. Fortnite, which I experience it with, has like, it's a 45 degree angle palette. It's quite easy for your brain to work out that as a, like, I don't get, I don't hallucinate like, oh, I got to shoot that person.
Yeah, my game was all about judging angles.
Angles, exactly.
Yeah, bouncing off walls.
And that would make sense if you've got amnesiacs doing it. It's like, well, sure, they've forgotten they played it. They've forgotten the fact they played it. But they've trained this aspect of their brain that does mathematical calculations and works out angles or works out simple math.
I think it really only happens with very simple things. Or it happens with the simple elements of...
A complex thing, like Fortnite. Yeah.
Exactly. So I think I think it's just training your brain to deal with, because your brain is a problem solving machine, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And you intuitively understand physics, which is why this is one of those things where, you know, when you play a video game and the physics is off,
yes,
it just feels wrong.
But when it's right, it feels like cut the rope, so clean, on the App Store is flipping,
feels so clean,
so gorgeous.
But also, physics of games is entirely subjective. Do you know a Mario game? How Mario games have a very specific physics to them. Mm-hmm. Mario has a way that he feels when he jumps and he falls and he lands, right? And he speeds up in a certain way. And if you've got a knockoff Mario game, I think they ported one of the early Mario games to the Switch or to the Nintendo 3DS, and it just doesn't feel right.
He moves differently.
Yeah. Doesn't work right. It feels wrong. Even a Sonic game or any of these.
Yeah.
I've played Sonic so much. If I'm playing a Sonic game where he doesn't move right, I can't play it. It doesn't feel right because you're so used to the physics of that that it's off.
I love talking about this. This is very off topic, but I love talking about this thing I realized whilst playing, I think probably Mario Kart, which is that, okay, so you have Mario Kart, right? Mario Kart comes out on the SNES in the 1980s or on the Wii U or on the Switch or whatever it is. And you experience Mario Kart, right, as the user interface. And the user interface changes over time. And, you know, Mario Kart Wii or Mario Kart Switch is so much more complex looking and so much more beautiful than sort of Mario Kart SNES, for example. But underlying every game like that, if you imagine Mario Kart, you experience Mario Kart as the user interface, right? This flashy graphic. But the underlying thing of Mario Kart is a bunch of points going round a circuit, right? Where they are relative to each other and relative to the circuit. And things like how quickly they can accelerate, how quickly their turning circle is, And what happens when you bump into things and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. All that code, all that math, probably stays pretty much the same across every Mario Kart game, right? Or it's tweaked, but the underlying code, the underlying idea between a racing game on the Switch, or a racing game on the SNES, is different characters have different physics. They can accelerate quicker, they brake quicker, they turn corners quicker, right? It's the same thing. The thing that has fundamentally changed is the flashy thing that makes you go, ooh, it's so pretty and exciting. Mm-hmm. But the game itself is nothing to do with that. That is like a tiny portion of the game. Then you apply to those points. Well, that point, when you're looking at that point, it has the shape of Mario. And Mario is stored as a shape and a bunch of textures. And it's just so weird to think about because we experience a computer or a game or whatever as the user interface. We don't experience all the underlying math
going on. I was going to say that because... If you guys have played Call of Duty, right?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So when you think back to trying to remember playing Call of Duty with your friends, right? Do you remember holding the controller?
Yes.
At all? Yeah. Do you remember what you were doing with the controller?
Yes.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
When I'm trying to remember playing Call of Duty, I'm not thinking like I was doing this swinging the stick. I can remember having the controller in my hand and like maybe pulling the trigger, but like I can't remember like
You don't have to think about where to reach to do something.
Yeah, I'm not thinking. Like, I can just do it right now. Like, yeah. I could play the game without having a game in front of me easily. But my point is, when I'm remembering it, I feel like I'm remembering what I'm seeing on screen. But like the actions of actually putting it into the controller are not necessarily consistent because I played it on different consoles as well.
Mm-hmm.
Played it on Xbox, PS3. I've played it on different things, so it's weird that my brain has this sort of. I mean, same with Pokemon. Where I've played every single Pokemon game on every single console. And my brain doesn't remember each individual controller or console or whatever. It's just the visual information and what I am doing.
Yeah.
Like, I remember Pokemon more as me walking around and doing it than I do me pressing the D-pad to move the little character around.
Of course, because you're a visual creature.
Exactly, It's just very odd that, like, that's how your brain remembers it, but also you can just pick it up and do it.
Yeah.
It's very strange. Brains are odd.
That was quite the tangent.
Yeah, another weird thing about brains is exploding head syndrome. You guys heard of this?
Okay.
Oh, this is the exploding heads.
This is the last one. This is the last one. So it's described as a benign parasomnia. So you know what parasomnias are. They're sort of basically sleep issues, right?
Okay.
We've spoken about them before. We spoke about it during...
sleepwalking.
Was it sleepwalking?
Science of sleepwalking, surely.
I thought it was the science
of...
Sleep paralysis. Science of sleep paralysis. So we spoke about it then. We spoke about it during sleepwalking as well. Because sleepwalking is a parasomnia. But essentially, it's when you experience a very loud sound when you're sort of falling asleep, which leads you to sort of wake up like, oh, wow, right? And when there's no sound whatsoever. And it says these events occur during the wake-sleep-sleep-wake transition period and generally last less than a second. You can also get flashes of light and feel distressed, but apparently there's no pain either. And, I should point out, your head doesn't explode. Nothing is wrong with your brain.
Oh, thank God.
You're just hallucinating. If it's not obvious, we're talking about hallucinations today.
Yeah.
You hallucinate a loud noise and maybe some flashing. And basically every single time I've read about this in different places, they've said, there's no issue with it. And most patients, as soon as they find out that it's not harmful, are generally fine with it. Because the biggest issue, I think, with exploding head syndrome is if you wake up hearing loud noises and flashing, you think, oh gosh, something's wrong with me.
Yeah.
Something's really wrong with me. And then you find out from your doctor, you're probably fine. And you're like, oh, cool, okay.
Does it hurt?
No.
So it doesn't hurt in the way that a loud sound would hurt?
No, it's just a loud noise.
Just startles.
Well, I mean, you hallucinate a loud noise, so I don't think it hurts. It can't physically hurt your ears.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So you hallucinate a loud noise and maybe some flashing, and it wakes you up while you're kind of falling asleep or as you're kind of waking up. Yeah, so it was first described in 1876 by an American neurologist, and it wasn't classed as a sleep disorder until 2005. But yeah, it's more common in people that, again, it's not, I don't think it's been super heavily studied, but it's more common in people that have got sleep paralysis. Mm. And apparently, almost 37% of people with a history of sleep paralysis reported experiencing exploding head syndrome symptoms at least once. There's not enough studies on it to know sort of exactly how and why and when it happens. Or it could just be that it's a fairly normal thing to happen.
Yeah.
And so it'll happen to a fair few people, sometimes. And it might just happen to some people quite often.
What a dreadful name.
Exploding Head Syndrome. I love
like
it.
Like Phantom explosion syndrome.
I love exploding head syndrome. It's fun. It's a fun name.
It's a conversation starter when you say to someone, oh, I've got exploding head syndrome.
And yeah, but then it's a disappointing explanation after that. It's like starting with a punchline.
It's quite fun.
Ooh, what's that? Oh, you hallucinate a loud noise?
You just hear loud noise.
That's boring. Okay.
But what else would you call it? Come up with a name.
Loud noise syndrome.
Like phantom explosion syndrome or phantom noise syndrome or like something that's a bit more specific. Because exploding head syndrome doesn't tell you anything about...
Feels like your head's exploding.
It feels like your head is exploding. Well, or you just have a loud noise.
If you hear a loud noise and you see flashing, it's like your head's exploding, right?
No, it's like there's an explosion somewhere.
My head's never exploded.
I wouldn't assume.
When's the last time there was
an explosion outside and then my whole room flashed, I wouldn't assume my head has exploded.
Luke, why don't you ask the person in your film whose head you exploded how it felt, and then we can see how it is, right?
Yeah.
Once you ask that person, because you don't have
any experience. Well, he has got exploding head syndrome.
Does he really?
In the film.
Well, yeah, I'd assume so.
If I was to correctly use the term exploding head syndrome to mean someone whose head explodes.
Well, that was a hallucination in the film.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. Not to spoil it, by the way. Sorry.
It's like four minutes in, don't worry.
Yeah. It's very funny,
We call it the drowning of Arthur Braxton, but then at the end his head just explodes. It's a real left turn.
It's a plot twist and a half.
Actually, there's another character in the film whose head explodes, but I'm not going to say who. It's after the first head explosion, there is another one. I just want people to be like waiting for it, the entire
Imagine
film.
You wait a whole film and then you get the credits and you're like, did I miss it?
Did I miss it? And you have to go back through and watch it again.
Yeah, you have to watch it again.
So that is exploding head syndrome and that is hypnopompic and hypnagogic hallucinations. Mm. What do you guys think?
Not fun.
No, but no? I'm glad I have a word for the things I experienced as a child.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. It can be positive. It can be negative. It can be neutral. Really.
Yeah, I had lightsabers. Yeah.
Very positive.
Very positive. Very,
unless you're a Padawan and Anakin is coming. Anyway.
I'm just glad I've got a name for the Tetris effect now.
Right? Yeah.
I've had that so many times. Yeah.
I think it's really crazy that this was chosen by the patrons, but also that I had it so vividly just the other day and we're doing this episode. Mm. So I don't usually get it unless I play,
I get it a lot
of Tetris.
Yeah. If I've been out on a boat, I get it when I go to sleep that night.
Yeah.
The feeling of being on a boat and also the ocean.
I get what you mean. How often are you out on boats?
In Australia, quite a bit.
How often are you in Australia?
Well, not a lot anymore.
Yeah, fair enough.
For the first 17 years of my life, I was there quite a bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll let that one slide.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting. Like, because I just want to say, when I do play Tetris, my brain has a Tetris mode, apparently, that I can tap into after playing about 3 hours of consecutive Tetris.
Ooh.
Wherein, the entire world becomes Tetris, and
must tessellate everything.
Yeah, I gotta cram things into where they fit so they disappear. but no, that is the episode for today. I've got a little thing I want to mention before we finish.
Oh,
quick fire quiz.
Yeah, quick fire quiz.
Oh, dun 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 dun. Hypnopogonic combat edition, Tetris edition.
I really hope the question is, what is the name for the two waking and sleeping hallucinations?
Give him any
Jam
ideas.
Does not have any clue.
Change the question.
I've actually got a question that I wrote earlier. And Luke, I looked up the answer and found it. So when I was writing the question, Luke was sitting next to me and asked what the answer was. And I said, I didn't know yet. You don't remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, you do? Okay, good. You just looked very confused.
No.
Okay. So this quick fire quiz. So I'm going to ask you one question. One question only between the two of you. The first person to buzz in correctly with the correct answer gets to win. What do they win, Jamp?
Nothing.
That's right. And you've also got to finish asking the question before you can buzz in with the correct answer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those are all the rules.
Yeah.
Cool. Great. Duke.
Duke?
Of Edinburgh? I love
Duke. Remember Duke from Tracy Beaker?
I'd never watched Tracy Beaker.
Get out. Duke was like the absolute daddy of the dumping ground.
What about the Dukes of Hazzard? Never watched that.
No. Duke and Lamp.
Duke and Lamp.
Oh,
Duke
and Lamp. I am Lamp.
Ship names.
Lamp and Duke. Jamp, what is your buzzer?
Woohoo!
Luke, what is your buzzer?
Sorry, I just had a hypnopompic hallucination.
You're very good at those.
Thank you.
You secretly
have you been practicing?
No, I've just done it my whole life.
So practicing.
Yeah.
Practicing's intentional, isn't it?
I mean, so my question for you today is, and you need to answer this specifically and correctly, when do you get hypnagogic and hypnopompic hallucinations?
Ah!
Luke, I think you got there first.
you get hypnagogic hallucinations as you are, well, gogic, sorry, I have to be very specific to Corey's pronunciation, as you are in the state between waking and sleeping. And you get hypnopompic hallucinations as you're in the state between sleeping and waking.
That's correct.
Ding, 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 that is correct.
Hell yeah!
Well done, well done, Luke. Yeah. Sorry, Jamp. You just, bit faster next time.
I'll Mario a bit quicker next time.
Well, that's the show for you today, but we do want to thank some people, some of our lovely patrons who made this episode possible. Yes. We do, what don't we? Want to thank them?
You guys? Yeah. I do, yeah.
You texted us these names.
I texted you the names.
Great.
So, we want to start off with thanking River.
These are our new patrons for the month, by the way.
Oh, yeah. If you want to be thanked next month, just head to our Patreon, patreon.com/SciGuys. Sign up and we'll thank you for signing up. What a lovely thing to do.
I would like Jam to take this next one.
Well, oh my God. Okay. Thank you to Strast Pelmenia. Thank you to Passion Dumplings.
You know what I did? I translated that from Russian and also transcribed the Russian characters into English to make it easier for whoever it was going to say it.
Strast Pelmenia.
Strast Pelmenia. Strast. Or Passion Dumplings for short.
Strast Pelmenia.
Thank you to Alex Munoz.
Thank you to Tia Nguyen.
Thank you to Jazzatello or Jay's Tello? I'm not quite sure. Sorry.
Thank you, Isabar.
Thank you, Georgie Teddy.
Thank you to Eleanor Allison.
Thank you to Grace Cosgren.
Thank you to Rosie Tilbrook.
Thank you to Gabriella Everett Polgar.
Thank you, Holly Cutts.
Thank you to Lucy.
Hell yeah. Thank you to all of you.
Thank you all.
Thank you all.
Wow. How lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah, very nice. Great one this week. Yeah. Great one this month. Good choice, you guys. If you want to vote on episode topics or submit episode topics or even just choose a topic that we have to absolutely do, no questions asked, within reason, you can head to our Patreon, patreon.com/SciGuys, and sign up to get all of that and potentially more. So I think that's it for today, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Nothing else you guys want to add?
Not a thing.
No.
Not a nugget.
Fantastic. Well, before we go, we would like to thank all of our patrons with a very special thank you to executive producers Finn TZ and Ashley Muller. And also, thank you for watching. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday, and why not leave us a nice wee comment? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCore everywhere. You can
follow me at Jamkin everywhere.
You can follow me at LukeCutforth everywhere.
I have been in my pants for this entire time. Goodbye.
What?
Yeah, I've not been wearing trousers. You'll see.